Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to The Bunker Show, coming to you live and direct from our top secret bunker hidden deep, deep, deep beneath the sewers of Westminster, where we are going to be looking into quite a diverse and interesting subject this evening. And if you'd like to join the conversation or add your thoughts and comments, join us in the Dark City Radio chat room. And we really appreciate your feedback. Also, joining me as always in the bunker, here's Jimmy.
Yeah, and as always, it's great to be back in the bunker. And yeah, like Fab was saying, please add to the discussion in the chat room. And I have to say, I'm really looking forward to tonight's topic, because this is something that I don't have that much experience of, but came across back in the very early 80s in Omni magazine.
It's a field of research that has been around for quite a while, and its relative obscurity, and especially in the mainstream, is something that makes, hopefully will make tonight's show quite an interesting one. We have our guest this evening is Leon Southgate, who's an orgone researcher. And Leon, it's great to have you on the show.
Thanks a lot. Cheers, Fabrice.
And Leon, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about how you got interested in orgone?
Well, it started off with my dad, really. He was a psychotherapist and jazz musician, but his main interest was developing a kind of more informal type of psychotherapy, which he called barefoot counselling. So he had an extensive library of sort of therapeutic type books, and one day I just happened to see Peter Reich's book called A Book of Dreams, which was the son of Wilhelm Reich, Wilhelm Reich being the guy who discovered the life energy orgone. And this book tells a very personal story from Peter's point of view, who was a young lad when all the sort of terrible things with the FDA and the book burning and all that happened. And that kind of just got me hooked, really. So Peter Reich's book.
From there, did you I guess follow your interest through the field, or did you have an interest from a sort of psychological point of view?
Well, I didn't really have much of an interest in it at all, as far as I was aware. I pretty much didn't know what I wanted to do in life until my mid-30s at the earliest, and I drifted into music and then into nursing, because I lived in Liverpool, and I thought nursing would be a good way to guarantee a living for a Londoner in a city, a strange city. And so it wasn't until I did an acupuncture course, so I left nursing and trained as an acupuncturist. And then at the end of the acupuncture course, there was a master's degree option. And and it was when I was thinking of a research project to do for that option, it all came back to me about my dad's orgone blanket when I was a kid. Because one of his girlfriends at the time, I think, made him a little orgone blanket. And my dad used to say to me, "Don't put it on, but don't leave it on all night, or you get really weird dreams." And I fell asleep with it a couple of times and had really bizarre dreams when the orgone blanket was on all night. And so orgone was in the back of my mind. And so when the research project came up, I remembered Peter Reich's book and the orgone blanket as a kid, and I put the two together and thought maybe I can do a research project into sort of the chi and acupuncture and Wilhelm Reich's orgone, and see if they're the two same things.
Just for the benefit of the listeners out there, would you be able to just explain what orgone energy is?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's two ways of approaching this. I could give you a definition of what most people in the area think Orgone is.
Give us the two ways.
Or I could give you like a history of how he discovered it. Which would you prefer?
Give us both.
Okay. Well, I mean, the history, it might make more sense to go from the history, really, I suppose. Wright was a young man in World War One, and then after that ended, he became a doctor in Vienna, and he got bored of medicine and wanted to do the newfangled psychotherapy that Freud was launching. So he quickly became kind of pretty much the number one student of Freud's, and would have inherited Freud's legacy, that would have become sort of the right-hand man of Freud. But they fell out over some years later because Wright discovered that there was a problem with all the, he saw mainly working class people and people who had a lot of problems, and unlike the most of the other analysts who saw more middle class people, impulsives they were called in those days. The patients he saw, they would probably be borderline personality disorders in the current lingo, or schizophrenics. And he saw that there was a problem with the sexual discharge of energy in all his patients. And Wright saw that there was like a process of a four-beat process of tension, charge, discharge, and relaxation, which he called the life formula or the orgasm formula. And sort of Freud was getting increasingly upset by the direction Reich was going in, because Freud was more wanted to make it more unemotional and unsexual in a way, and so Reich carried on sort of looking at the libido and energy, found that all his impulsive patients had a problem with experiencing pleasure. Mm-hmm. So Wright then thought, well, Freud's libido must be a real thing. Whereas Freud first thought it was a real thing, and then he wanted to make it just a concept. That's where they fell out, really, the crux of their fallout. So Wright continued saying libido is a real thing, that the pleasure, this pleasure mechanism that is blocked in my patients, that there's a real energy behind it. And so he looked at electrical functions and found that he was the first person to investigate pleasure and pain and sexuality bioelectrically. And he found that when you feel pleasure, there's an increase in, I'm not that up on electrical stuff, but there's some kind of increase in potential with pleasure and a decrease with pain. It might be the other way around. But anyway, a bioelectrical reflection of pleasure and pain. And then after that, he thought he was interested in how organisms pulse. So how organisms are created. So that kind of led him on to look at at a microscopic level. And he eventually found, by looking at microscopic level, he found that there was these tiny vesicles about the size of a bunch of microbes, a bunch of viruses, that are created when you heat matter in water. So it's like Pasteur thought that he'd found that you can get no, you have to have a cell to create a living organism. But if he'd have heated things to an even higher temperature and looked at it at a much higher magnification, he would have seen what Reich discovered, which are bions. And and the bions had a, when he looked at the bions in a microscope, he got conjunctivitis. So he thought these bions must have irradiation. So that was how he discovered orgone.
And his work into that radiation and looking at bioforms was a fundamental part of his work.
Yeah. Well, the first stage was the character studies, and that led him on to pain and pleasure, and how they link with bioelectricity, and that led him into the third stage, which is like bioenergy, because he saw that there was a radiation coming off the pulsing. The pain and pleasure bit made him think about pulsing and sort of organisms, looking at organisms and pulsing at a very low, very high microscopy, caused him to discover these entities called bions. And then that led to the third stage, which is the biological energy or a life energy. So most people would call orgone a life energy, because the current physics doesn't recognize a life energy, which is very problematic for it. And that takes us into the fourth stage, because current physics throughout the ether in the Victorian times, because the Victorians used to think that there was a soup in which all the particles existed. In the Victorian age, they threw that idea out, or at the end of that age. But basically, if you had that ether and it also had biological properties, that would be the same as the cosmic orgone. So that's the fourth stage. So after he saw the radiation coming off these tiny little biological units called bions, he then tried to contain that radiation, and that's how he discovered the orgone accumulator. Because by trying to contain it, he found that metal has different effects on it to other materials. So that's how the orgone cabinets came about.
And they were to harness that energy, and he wished to use that in therapy. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, he in his character, in the first stage of his work, in the character stuff, he discovered that libidinal or energy, the pleasure pain energy, gets blocked in the body. So that's where his that's where body psychotherapy came from, which Reich also pioneered, because the emotions and that are in your mind are also stored in your body, and Reich noticed how that was stored in segments, so he would release those segments to release that energy. But half the time he'd use just talking to talk about the way the character stores those blockages, and half the time he would press on the blockages directly, using breathing and pressure to release the blockages. It's very powerful therapy.
And what's interesting about what you're actually describing there is that this is well before the time where scientists were, quite familiar with the whole array of neurological chemistry that's going on in the brain, and the stuff that we can actually quantify these days, where there are changes in the actual physiology of the brain where between emotional states.
That's right. And he Wright was also the first person to say that the brain pulsates, because he knew that life energy was a pulsating thing, and he knew that his patients had had this sexual energy that pulsates and that gets blocked. He was able to deduce from that the brain wouldn't be a static organ. It would actually be a pulsating organism within an organism, if in a way. So he was the first person to, years before there was any way of really looking at a functioning brain, years before it was possible to really answer that question by observation, he said the brain pulsates, and it turns out that was correct. And so like the bioelectrical stuff, he was the first person to look at whether that there's correlations with bioelectricity and pleasure and pain. The brain's interesting with schizophrenia, because most of the body blockages, there's this thing called armoring, which is the way you hold the blockages against your life energy flowing. Like a good soldier would have a lot of chest armoring and be quite sort of bodily armored, but
well protected.
And all the emotions are kept in and tight, and the emotions of crying and longing and laughter are suppressed by this body armor in the chest and in the pelvis. But in a schizophrenic, they often don't have any armor at all in their body, but the armoring's in their brain, so that their brain can't pulsate properly. So Reich had methods for releasing, because he realized that the eyes were part of the brain. So if you, in a schizophrenic or have stuck eyes, so he remobilized the eyes, which it's important not to try to mobilize stuck eye segments without a lot of help, preferably professional help, because it can release huge amounts of stuff. But his psychiatric therapy, or his psychoanalytical therapy rather, is probably the only therapy that of that type from Freud that would be able to contact people who were slightly psychotic or schizophrenic, but because it's got that physical ability to remobilize these blocked segments in the brain. But yeah, the neurological research is interesting, but it'll only go to a point, because you can say that segment A lights up when you feel pleasure, or or segment B lights up when you learn a new idea, but that's as far as it goes, really, because you can't ultimately locate any memory or function in the brain. The brain is so plastic. Some people who have bits missing of the brain, they'll just move that function to another part. So any single memory that doesn't get stored, you can't locate it to a single neuron. It's kind of in a field. So although neurology can say this part of the field lights up when this happens, that's their kind of stumbling block. They can't get beyond that point.
With that sort of, the neuroplasticity of the brain, and it's, we had a previous guest on the Bunker Show, Wei Chang, who's developed the fractal brain theory, and it's interesting when you come to sort of break down our complex neurological functions, the tricky cognition that our brain can do, and its dynamic way of doing that. And even when looking into it very, very hard, it's there are elements of the human experience which seem to evade classification, such as sort of deja vu or, you know, non-local information transfer.
Yeah. That's a very good point, and that's really where Sheldrake's work takes off on morphic fields and stuff, because he shows that mind has got to be non-local in some way, and you know, his research into how people can tell when they're being stared at, or how dogs can tell when their owners are coming home.
And that's quite a fascinating experiment that was done with the dogs, which I believe Sheldrake, was that one of his experiments?
Yeah, that was one of his main areas, and he kind of gave good evidence that there's telepathy exists, and it's got to be a non-local function, because you can't really send energy. If energy is instantly everywhere, or if the information is instantly everywhere, then it can't have traveled there. It doesn't.
Yeah.
So there is something beyond energy.
Well, you know, like, however, a pulse of energy can be detected.
Yeah, you can get a pulse of energy. I mean, this really takes us all the way to my own research with orgone and consciousness, because there's a thing in acupuncture. Acupuncture uses an energy which I think is the same as the orgone life energy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely non-local effects in acupuncture. In fact, they're utilized. Like there's a point on the little toe called bladder 67, and it's well known. I think even British midwives sometimes use. A few have been trained to use this point. If you heat that point, it can help turn a breech fetus. So that it's positioned correctly, and there's no point of connection between the point on the toe and the abdomen. Mm-hmm. So there must be some kind of non-local effect going on. And there's a system of acupuncture called Korean hand acupuncture. And there's points on the hand that activate the point on the body. Like one time I had a patient in a detox unit who had really severe toothache, and he couldn't see a dentist for another couple of days. So I located the Korean hand point and told him it was going to hurt when I needled it. I located it very exactly, so that it had the exact point for that tooth on his finger. And when I needled it, he nearly shot through the roof, because all the pain from his jaw just jumped out of his jaw and into his finger. And the jaw was completely pain-free, but he was virtually crying from the pain in his finger. So I managed to persuade him to keep it in for about 30 seconds, and then I took it out. But then the pain gradually dissipated from his jaw. So you often see that with acupuncture. The points will activate themselves and then activate another point. It's quite surprising how it seems to have a mind of its own, and the energy will jump from say, a point on the leg to a point on the arm, and a patient will say, oh, that point on my foot was aching, and then it suddenly stopped and the point on my arm started aching. And to me, that makes sense because the points will be related.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing that you say about the hands having that kind of correlation, because I know some people with stutters are able to, when they're about to start stuttering, are able to manipulate their hands in such a way that it seems to alleviate that blockage.
Yeah, I could imagine that. That would make a lot of sense. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if, because in Chinese medicine, stuttering is connected to the heart energy. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if they're pressing on points on the heart channel, because that ends in the hand.
So does orgone energy, the flow of it through the body, does that have any correlation to meridian lines?
Yeah, it does. It actually runs through the meridian lines, and the meridian lines are becoming more and more scientifically evidenced. Electrically, you can see them. The Russians have machines for electrically identifying the meridians, and the Koreans have discovered a sublymph system with little vesicles in them that Wright discovered those tiny little vesicles called bions when he was after the bioelectrical stage, in the beginning of the third stage of his work. The Koreans discovered a little vesicle that very similar to those bions in this sublymph system that they found corresponded with the acupuncture meridians. The Koreans have done some great stuff in acupuncture in the last 50 years. They've really taken things forward.
And have you found that the acupuncture experience that you obviously had with your training, it corresponds with a certain amount of your research into Reich's work?
Yeah, I mean, it really, if it wasn't for the acupuncture, I wouldn't have really discovered my path in life, really, because it wasn't until I did the acupuncture research degree that I found my passion in life, which is orgone research. So if I'd gone down another route, say, perhaps I did think of going into horticulture or agriculture. I think I'd still end up in the same place. I think I'd still be a life energy researcher now, because that's really where my life wanted to go. But acupuncture happened to be the route that took me there. But other routes would have maybe done the same job. Orgone is the number one passion in my life outside of sort of personal life.
Well, I tell you what I did find interesting. I don't know if you've ever thought about it, but you mentioned that your dad was a jazz musician and, you know, you were also a musician. So did you see any kind of connection between investigating life force and, you know, like understanding the way music works and the way people react to music?
That's an interesting question. No one's asked me that before. Music definitely frees the energy flow in your body, and it's kind of as soon as you hear music, it changes your consciousness. So it's got a non-local aspect to it, as well as a very sort of physical material aspect. And yeah, music was always a part of my life as a child, watching my dad play and going to concerts with my dad, and being taken around pubs and jazz gigs and things.
And music is like a manipulation of energies, isn't it? A manipulation of the way certain sound waves pulse.
I think Reich played piano a little bit, and he did some artwork, but his life was so intense with all the discoveries he made that he didn't really have much time for himself, really, and for things. I've certainly found my taste in music have changed so much from jazz to classical. But I notice when animals like classical music,
It's interesting, you know, as you mentioned horticulture as well, and you know, the interaction between the environment and, you know, the life with animals. We spoke a little bit about Sheldrake's experiments of people and their animals having sort of non-local information transference of, you know, an animal exhibiting certain behavior when the person makes the steps they do to leave work, or those type of non-local interactions, I guess. And you know, do you think that the Reich's work, as he did through the different stages, kind of expanding out from the initial character studies with the individual to actually, you know, something of a more sort of all-encompassing, as you mentioned, the Victorian concept of the ether.
Yeah, well, he got that. That was the fourth stage of his work. From after discovering the radiation in the tiny vesicles that are like a halfway stage between non-animate matter and living matter, the bions. After discovering that radiation, he went on to find that radiation is in the environment as well. And he did an experiment where he mixed a tiny amount of nuclear material, radioactive material, with put it in a very strong orgone cabinet. He put it in two orgone cabinets, I think, inside an orgone room. So a huge concentration of orgone in a really pure environment in Maine, in Norfolk, New York. And this, putting the nuclear material in there, set off a big chain reaction. Which created a thing he called Orinor, which is orgone that's had been overexcited by nuclear forces. So he then used tubes grounded into water.
You mentioned Orinor. Is that the same as DOR, deadly orgone radiation?
No, it's slightly different. People do confuse them sometimes. Orgone is life energy, like the radiation off the bions that Wright found you could accumulate in the cabinets. And then after accumulating them in the cabinets, he thought this life energy is likely to be in the environment too. So I think he'd noticed that when he pointed a pipe across a lake, that the waves above the lake changed. So he grounded a set of pipes with a cable into a lake, and he noticed that changed the clouds formations. It's like an antennae that grounded into water. It pulls the orgone out of the sky from being just even to being concentrated. That's called the cloud buster. So when when he created this Oranor experiment, which means orgone against nuclear, so abbreviation, the overexcited orgone, he used one of these cloudbusters to try and pull the overexcited energy back into, ground it back into the earth. So, but just to get to your back to your question, sorry, I've gone off trying to explain the background. But the orgone is defined. I define orgone slightly differently, but because of my consciousness research, I've expanded its definition. But Reich's definition was a life energy. And then that life energy, if it becomes stuck and stagnant, say over a city with lots of electrical and chemical pollution, you might get a haze forming. You'd call that door deadly orgone. It's kind of stuck orgone. But Oranor's different. It's not, Oranor's not the same as door. Because Oranor is when orgone is very overexcited, and it's got a purplish colour, and it can make people quite ill. It can also make people feel good, and if they're used to it. But it, basically, it's just overexcited orgone.
Okay.
It can attack the body, and it can attack the mind as well in certain ways. And the
You mentioned earlier orgone cabinets and accumulators and devices, and you also mentioned the beveled rods in the water, tubes in the water.
Yeah.
So how did those things function, and how did Reich go about storing and utilizing those orgone bioforms?
Sure. Well, that brings us back to ether, because ether was actually wrongly dismissed. It basically kind of a huge cover-up in physics. To get relativity in quantum physics off the ground, you needed to have an empty space. Like, the electrical fields or the electrical charges in attached to the particles travel through empty space in relativity in quantum physics, pretty much so. But the ether shouldn't have been dismissed. The experiments that dismissed it, Michelson and Morley's experiments in the end of 1897, I think, or was it later? Around about that turn of the century, anyway. And if the ether is real, which it, I believe it is, and there's some good research from James DeMeo, who one of the sort of scientists in orgone research in the States. Nice. He's done a paper on how the ether was wrongly dismissed, and that a guy called Miller, I've forgotten his first name now, Dayton Miller, that's it. And his experiments were superb, whereas Michelson and Morley looked for ether in a basement, which is the worst place you can possibly look for it. Whereas Dayton Miller looked for it on top of a mountain with really good equipment and making sure that he controlled for thermal effects. And so it's almost... So we've gone down a wrong path in physics. We've dismissed the background ether. So that if the background ether is there, then it's pretty similar to orgone. So Reich's basic thing was that there is this background soup that we live in. There's a non-particle soup that's everywhere and penetrates everything. And so if certain things can condense this soup, like the cabinets, and certain things can pull this soup down, because water is very... the ether or the orgone, it is very attracted to water. So if you put a bunch of pipes or an antennae and point it at the sky and ground it into water, say if you wanted to dissipate a cloud, the orgone energy in the cloud, by pulling that away from the sky and into the lake through the pipes that are grounded into water, you take the orgone energy away from the cloud, and then the water can't stay, so the cloud will then disappear.
So would you go as far as saying that the guys behind the Large Hadron Collider project, are they going about it the wrong way?
Pretty much so. I wonder what that project is all about, really, because
it almost does. It's almost like it's trying to isolate the ether, isn't it?
Well, they keep on trying to reinvent the ether in many ways. Like the zero point field and the many quantum physicists will say that there's a kind of background energy that is that exists, but it only has this much effect, or there's some kind of subatomic connecting field, but it doesn't affect. They try and keep a lid on it, really, but they have to keep on reinventing it. Like there's a guy called William Tiller, who's got superb evidence that consciousness directly affects reality, but his when he found that there's definitely some kind of physical non-local field that connects everything up, and so he had to reinvent the ether. So he said, well, there's actually two sets of realities. You've got normal reality, which works according to quantum physics and relativity physics, and then you've got another reality which has like a connected ether, but you don't need all that, but there is which is where I kind of depart from traditional orgone research, because if you say that orgone is only an energy, there's a problem. You can't explain telepathy, or you can't explain non-local effects within energy. I call it energyism after materialism, because
which is it's something that I guess a lot of people experience in their day-to-day life. I know there's a sort of experiment that if you don't look at your telephone and you try and guess who it is that's messaged you or called you, that if you do that for a few weeks, actually your results in the third week are far in excess of what they are in the first week.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, my dog's telepathic. It can read my mind. I mean, if I'm by the fridge strongly thinking cheese, it'll trot along. I don't have to call it. It knows I'm thinking about one of her favorite foods. And there was one time before I came to Liverpool, I had a precognition of just an ordinary night out with my new flatmates. And I saw it in perfect detail, about 10 minutes of that night out, just going into a nightclub and sitting at a table. And then a few weeks later, it happened exactly as my premonition was. And it had been brought to mind recently because it was the nightclub in that Lime Street cinema that's just been demolished.
I mean, it's something that a lot of people, I guess, you know, feel and see experientially throughout their life, I guess, that you know, makes it one of those things that actually sits in people's consciousness. And, you know, relative to orgone research and you know, how do you feel that, you know, it can shed light on those experiences that people have?
Well, that's why my definition of orgone slightly expanded than Reich's. And, well, I think Reich would have got there if his work in prison had been allowed to come out. If he hadn't have been, well, I feel that there was no way he was going to be allowed out. I mean, he was in a right mess when he died, and he was okay a couple of weeks before that, and he had double.
I mean, actually, but it would probably be a good point now. It might diverge a little bit because, in some ways, Reich fell into disrepute. With some quite powerful elements. I mean, maybe you could tell us a little bit about that and explain how he ended up in prison, I guess.
Yeah, I will do. I'd just like to answer the previous question, if I can. Sure. The thing about energy, because like Reich wasn't sure if orgone just made consciousness through moving around in the body. That was his theory of perception, is that orgone moved around against the membrane of the body and that somehow generated consciousness. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't explain really what consciousness is or how consciousness can have non-local effects. So my initial paper at the orgone continuum suggested that the definition of orgone should be enlarged slightly, so that rather than just being an energy, it's actually it's got a spirit level where it's pure consciousness, but a physical consciousness, and then that gradually morphs into energy, and that energy can produce matter.
Have you gone as far as discovering, or even attempting to discover if orgone energy travels upon any known wavelength?
I think you probably could transmit orgone, like sort of Tesla transmitted electricity. That's an area that's completely new, really. That's not really. But I think when that's interesting, that, because that's an implication I hadn't thought of, because if orgone is a non-local force at its very root, that's why I call orgone a force now rather than an energy, because I think at its basis it's a non-local spirit phenomena that gradually morphs into an energy. But that's an interesting point, because if orgone is non-local, you should be able to transmit it from one point to another.
And going back to your points about premonitions and such, you know, when you think about the laws that are dictated by the equation for relativity, then, you know, like, theoretically, you know, just say if time travel was possible, we could only go traveling back through time, not through into the future. And, you know, this orgone experience actually jumps that barrier and does go forwards.
Yeah, I think because that's one of the things with time and energy, because energy is movement in time. An energy will cause a chain of effects within a period of time, whereas consciousness seems to be able to skip time. Like the precognition couldn't have happened by a transmission of energy, because I saw it before it happened. So that's why I think there's an aspect of orgone that's beyond energy.
It functions in a non-linear fashion.
Well, I think there's an aspect of both chi and orgone that functions in that fashion. Yeah, and you certainly be able to time travel in terms of consciousness, whether that's possible on a material level or an energy level, because
maybe only as far as each pulse
matter. But possibly, in the orgone continuum essay on my website, which is orgonecontinuum.org, I do look into all the different evidences for chi and orgone having this non-local quality. But we've jumped ahead of ourselves quite a bit here. Do you want to go back to Reich and the prison period? Because
yes, I think that would probably be interesting for people who haven't heard of him before. I think that would help fill in a bit of the history.
Sure. Well, for many years he quite peaceably just went about his research and printing his journals and. He made cabinets that people used around the country in the US, and a lot of people found them beneficial, and a growing group of doctors were working with him with the cloud busters, and they were finding major effects of the cloud busters on getting rid of the door smog and on creating healthy pulsation in atmospheres and helping with rain for, I think, some blueberry growers were having problems in his local area, and he managed to help end a drought locally. He also diverted a hurricane with cloud busters that was going towards New York. So a lot of very positive work was going on.
And I guess, you know, groundbreaking practical work that has, you know, that had practical applications.
Yeah, and like sort of he started a whole new field in psychiatry, body-based psychotherapy. He started that field. He was also the first person to photograph life energy. He used X-ray machines to... Actually, I don't know if that was pre-Curlian, but it was pretty early. So he was doing all this great work. He discovered a life energy. He'd found out how the steps between non-living matter and living matter. He'd found this life energy in the environment.
When you said he was clearing some of the smog, would that be sort of literally cleaning up the environment using that energy?
Yeah, but he was one of the first persons to notice the desert haze, because he thought the desert haze wasn't just particles but was deadly orgone. And he noticed if he got rid of the desert haze with cloud busters that the deserts would start greening themselves. He was doing an amazing amount of work in all these different areas. But I think the drug companies were worried about the orgone cabinets, because if you can just sit someone in an orgone cabinet and increase their life energy charge, that's going to have an effect on virtually every type of illness. I mean, it's not a simple cure-all, but it's definitely going to have a major effect that can be fine-tuned so in various situations.
And so do you think that would have, the drug companies were aware that that maybe could have impacted their sales of sort of, you know, headache pills or...
They were definitely aware. There was a very defamatory article printed in about him by a journalist called Brady, and then that article got the Federal Food and Drug Administration involved in investigating Reich, and they did a complete hatchet job of investigating him. And then there was a pretty much fraudulently obtained court injunction against him, and sort of quite typical of Reich. He was so involved with his work, and he didn't think the court had a jurisdiction over his scientific work, so he didn't fight it.
Sounds very much like Nikolai Tesla's story, doesn't it?
Yeah, they were, and something people often don't know about Tesla is that Tesla believed the same things that Reich did. He believed there was an ether, and he believed there was a cosmic force. Same with Mesmer. That was Mesmer in France. He discovered the cosmic force too, and that's why they attacked his work so much. And but there was a technical violation of the court injunction against Reich that I think one of his co-workers shipped an orgone box or some materials interstate, and because Reich, I mean, perhaps if Reich had fought it more on a formal legal basis, maybe things would have been slightly different. But I sometimes doubt that. I think they would have got him one way or another. There's no way they were going to allow his work to, or for him to come out of prison, I think.
Right. I mean, if the charge was mislabeling of goods across state borders, that's not, it's not a crime that you think of in the same way as, you know, armed robbery or no. Mugging.
Yeah, I mean, the FDA is essentially, they break into homeopaths' premises with machine guns. I mean, that's something you'd imagine would happen in Stalinist Russia.
Well, it falls under. It's funny, like, you brought that up, because I think those homeopaths were the raids were conducted under the home security bill.
Yeah. I mean, they're arming everyone. I mean, they're wanting to be giving lollipop ladies guns and telling them to boss everyone about. But basically, there was an injunction, a technical injunction against his work, which got overlooked by accident, and they wouldn't allow Reich to fight his case in the way he wanted to, and to point out that the injunction was fraudulently obtained, and that they didn't have jurisdiction over his work. And the FDA's experiments that they said proved that orgone didn't exist, they're absolutely terrible. They're completely fraudulent. I mean, basically an 8-year-old could do better experiments than that. They were appalling. The ones that they published were just laughable. And so on that basis, Reich was imprisoned for 2 years, which was a really heavy sentence for that, for just a technical violation.
For mislabeling goods across state borders, and you get people, you know, if they carjack with a gun, they'll get a similar sentence. So.
Yeah, I mean, the mislabeling itself, that charge was fraudulent, because they were calling books like The Mass Psychology of Fascism, which is that was why his books were burnt in free countries. He's the only, probably the only person to be on both Stalin and Hitler's death list, and the only person to have his books burnt both by capitalists and communists. Because what really frightened them was the mass psychology of fascism. Because he pointed out how fascism works exactly, and the communists were frightened out of their wits by this book, mm-hmm. and the powers that be in the States were frightened by that. So they labeled books like that as advertising for a fraudulent medical device, when the FDA's examination of the medical device itself was fraudulent.
And so he was prosecuted on flawed research, effectively.
Yeah. Imprisoned. And a flawed definition of his, like, really in-depth. I mean, the mass psychology of fascism is not advertising or light reading for anything. And they labeled that as advertising for a sex box, which is what they claimed the orgone accumulators were, some kind of fatty thing. But they found no evidence. They didn't find a single person who would say that the devices didn't work.
And you know, you mentioned that his books were burnt, and how did that come about? Because you know, the incinerators allegedly were running for days.
Well, I don't know if they were running for days, but they burnt a huge amount of books. On two occasions, I think, before he went into prison in the 1950s, so probably about 55, somewhere around that. Yeah. And then I think they burnt another lot in 1965. And they also burnt orgone accumulators and made Wilhelm Reich's son, Peter, help with breaking them up, like sort of, I think Eva Reich put it as sort of having to dig your own grave before being shot and slung in the ground. Like they made the lab workers destroy the experimental equipment and then take all these sort of research books and burn them. But I think they just wanted to just completely destroy the science of orgonomy.
It sounds like, you know, not something that we'd associate with the land of the free or democratic, so-called democratic countries to engage in mass book burnings.
Yeah. Well, I think Germany, Stalinist, Russia, or USSR, and Germany and America all burnt his books.
When you think about it, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, all this controversy and book burning and suppression of information was occurring right around the time that the Cold War was just beginning to kick in, and there was huge investment in nuclear energy. So do you see any connection between the suppression of orgone energy and the reliance and the economic investment in nuclear power?
Yeah, I do, because nuclear energy is like a death energy. It's matter being destroyed. The conventional high temperature fission nuclear energy is like a death energy. And that's what the powers that be want to utilize, whereas a life energy that creates matter, that sort of would empower people and free people, and is against what their kind of centralized control and against domination of people. So the two, I mean, orgone energy kind of represents life and creativity. And freedom and non-centralization, and nuclear energy, kind of the way we have it, represents sort of death and destruction and centralization. But I think there's more to it scientifically as well, and that Reich shared, he found an orgone motor, well, he found a motor force with the orgone, and the US Air Force had all his materials on this motor force in 1955. So assuming they didn't just bin it, they've had 70 years to develop. The US Air Force has had a knowledge of using the force for propulsion, or using life energy for mm-hmm. propulsion for 70 years. And so have the Russians. Well, possibly, we don't know for sure, but mm-hmm. one of Reich's workers, called William Washington, went missing with an orgone motor. And some people think that he ended up in the Soviet Union. Certainly the Soviets would order every single piece of research that Reich published, the Soviets would order it. And they had orgone cabinets in Soviet Russia.
And so they were high-level people paying very close attention to the work that Reich was doing. And as you mentioned, with, you know, being able to alter weather patterns and such like, he was gaining some practical use of that up until he was imprisoned.
Yeah, I mean, it's thought that he might have met President Eisenhower, I think it was, at some point. I mean, the principal eyewitness retracted her statement, but Reich was always convinced that people in high places supported his work. But I think there's only, even in the 50s, there's only a limited influence that a president could have. But there is some indications that he met briefly when Eisenhower was on holiday in the main area near where Reich did his research at the time. Mm-hmm. And certainly the US Air Force were well aware of it. They used to, when he did a lot of cloud busting, because UFOs run on the force, as it were, on orgone. And when you use a cloud buster, it changes the density of the force over that area. So I think UFOs would probably be able to see where a cloud buster is being used, because if you use one regularly, you always get every single long-term experimenter or researcher with cloud busters has had frequent reports of UFOs, as did Reich. But the US Air Force used to fly over Reich's premises in Maine, called Organon, in Rangeley, and they used to fly over when there was sort of a lot of activity going on, sort of with cloud busters and UFOs. So they were certainly aware and interested.
When he actually went to prison, was he able to continue his research in some ways?
He did, and that's very pertinent, because this is where myself and there's a guy called Stephen Katz, who's the only orgone philosopher in the world that I know of, and that's where me and him kind of postulate that Reich had a fifth period of his work. So the first being character analysis, second being bioelectrical, third being bioenergy or the orgone energy, fourth being the cosmic energy, like orgone in the sky and in the solar system and the way the planets move and spirals and so on, and the fifth being, because Reich in his earlier work said that consciousness kind of came about when orgone moved in the body. But I say that there's another orgone is conscious in itself, I call it. And that, mm-hmm. I think that was the fifth stage of Reich's work in a way, because in prison, although he'd been quite against formal religions earlier on, he started to attend church and to pray, and told his son to pray, and he talked about having found a faith in a kind of monotheistic life and love that he definitely had a spiritual period in prison, and I think this is one of the things that worried the authorities, because he was doing okay. He didn't think he would survive prison. Before he went into prison, his common law wife Aurora, but no, it wasn't Aurora actually. Ollendorf, Ilse Ollendorf, she and him both agreed that he said he wouldn't likely survive it, but he was doing okay. But then coming up to his release, or the time that he could start applying for parole, he'd written a couple of books in prison about, I think one about equations and one about his sort of spiritual feelings, I think he had maybe got a bit of a chest infection and kept it to himself because he possibly, but his health really was in a right mess when he died compared to a few weeks before.
So it was a rapid illness, I guess.
Well, I kind of leave it very open what happened to him, because he was going through this spiritual period in prison, and that's where my work starts, really, the spiritual identity of Orgone. When he died, they wouldn't release the autopsy results. And Eva Reich, his daughter, who became she was a doctor, and she's done a lot of good work in orgonomy. They wouldn't let her speak to the prison doctor, but she, through her contacts, managed to locate the person who'd conducted the autopsy, and she got a verbal report from him of how he was when he died, and he was in a right mess. He had double pneumonia, liver failure, ankle edema, undiagnosed heart problems like calcification and stenosis. Wow. I mean, they put it down as he just died from heart failure, but it doesn't all add up, I don't think.
It sounds like there was more than heart failure, judging from his physical state.
Besides which, he should never have been in prison anyway, because with him having the mandatory initial cardiac exam should have found that his heart probably wasn't as in good nick as Reich thought. So he should have at the least gone to a prison hospital, really, rather than a standard hospital, possibly.
Mm-hmm. I've got a bit of a question for you here. You know, I've been thinking about this, and I've been thinking about tangible ways that we can, you know, like describe the Orgone effect and the effect of the energy. And I was just thinking that there's been two recent, you know, personal experiences that both Fab and I have had, and various other people, where, you know, last week musical scar artist Prince Buster died. And it was really funny because the week beforehand, we had been talking about him, you know, just out of the blue and listening to his music, and he just seemed to come up in conversation. And we all commented afterwards, you know, like, wow, you know, that's so bizarre. And the funny thing was, it happened around about the same time as Robin Williams dies. You know, it's kind of almost like George Lucas's Star Wars Disturbance in the Force idea. You know, what do you think about that?
Well, I've actually written a blog article and about George Lucas and Star Wars, because it kind of, my work kind of takes, if you had orgone plus consciousness, it would equal the force that George Lucas describes in Star Wars. In fact, George Lucas even mentions something similar to the Bions, because some of the
midichlorians.
Yeah, that's it. There's a lot of parallels between the Force in Star Wars and orgone. We talked quite a bit about the consciousness and aspects of it, but on a purely mundane, practical level, you can measure orgone in very simple, objective ways. It does have a level that is the same as like spirit or a physical consciousness, but it also has the medium level where it's very much a measurable energy. Like you've got electroscopic changes, like an electroscope, the way it discharges is changed within an orgone cabinet. You've got a temperature differential. The temperature inside an orgone cabinet under specific circumstances is about 0.1 of a centigrade higher than the temperature ambient. Vacuum tubes that are placed within an orgone accumulator for a long time will glow blue with tiny amounts of stimulation. Just the electroscopic charge from your hand will make a vacuum tube that's orgone charged glow bright blue. You've got Geiger counts, you know, the machines that are used to count
radiation.
If you soak them in orgone, that they go absolutely nuts. They'll measure like 2,000 times more than they would if they're not soaked in orgone. And you've got some of the latest research has looked at how orgone changes the structure of water. And it changes water's ultraviolet absorption. And it's linked into the weather, so it's very much a cosmic energy, which other researchers have found, like Picardi and Frank Brown and Schorberger and people like that, Dayton Miller, with the ether, have found that these effects change with cosmic influences. Uh-huh. So it's very much we have talked quite a bit about the consciousness and non-local stuff, but it is very much a physical energy too.
Well, you mentioned water, which is a very common physical element, you know, on this rock that we call home. You know, is there a strong correlation between water and orgone energy in that way?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You mentioned the way that the orgone currents in the water were observable through tubes.
Mm. Well, if you look at, one time I was mountain walking and looked at a lake very high up where there's higher orgone charges in the mountains, especially at the top of sort of very life, full of life areas, energetically full of life. You'll see the mountains have a blue glow, and the water can be very, very blue. And that's one of the effects of a high orgone charge. It creates a kind of a luminescence, a glowing blue thing, effect. And water itself is a very special substance. It has it has a memory, but it also has a very high affinity for orgone. It'll absorb orgone. And that's how the cloud busters work, really, is because water has such an affinity for orgone, the cloud busters pull the orgone into the lake or the river that's being used.
But of course, I guess us as human beings are made up considerably of water.
Yeah, the sort of the quality of the water in our bodies is very key, because just like the quality of the water outside our bodies can be degraded, the quality inside it too. If there's a low charge of life force, then the water in your body is not going to behave like it should. It's not going to be the same substance as water when it's highly charged.
It's coming down to the quality of the energy inside the body, the way it's conducted throughout the body. And I think that some popular neurologists like Oliver Sacks, their research, levels of dopamine in the brain, it all has to do with conductivity of electrical charges, doesn't it?
Yeah. And orgone has a quite specific, well, it tends to delay electrical charges, I think, because X-ray photographs of a high orgone field show a cloud around it. So that was how Reich photographed orgone energy fields, by getting a strong charge between his hands and then taking an X-ray. And there was a guy called Nordenstrom who found that there was... He was interested in the fogging on X-ray, early X-ray pictures, and he found that there was some sort of energy flowing in the body that caused this fogging. So there's an interaction between electricity and an orgone, but there's also an interaction between water's life force charge. Because water can be depleted or very energized. But that's how Schulberger swirls. The swirling movement puts the life force back into the water. If you take a bottle of water and put it in an orgone cabinet and leave it for, say a bottle of tap water that doesn't taste that good, and leave it in there for a few days, and then taste it, or taste completely different, taste more like a bottle of mineral water, because it's got when the charge of the water changes, its taste changes and it becomes more structured.
We're just coming almost to the close of the show, and with things such as those practical applications, how do you see the future for the field?
Well, there's kind of three groups of people working at the moment. There's a few sort of pure scientists scattered about in Italy and the States, and there's quite a lot of sort of interested researchers across Europe and South America and the States, and there's a few groups of physicians. So I think, hopefully, I mean, I know with my family being, well, my stepmom being quite a well-known psychoanalyst, and my dad, his background, I know from her that body psychotherapy is coming much back is being brought into the mainstream, and Reich is becoming more respectable in terms of body psychotherapy. There's a journal And then in the physical side of his work, I knew the water, there's a water journal, it's a more mainstream journal there. They're getting interested in the effects of all going on water.
And of course, you have your website as well. And we're just about to wrap up and say thank you very much for joining us on the show. And would you like to give your website again?
It's orgonecontinuum.org.uk. Should I spell that?
We've got it on the flyer, so
yeah.